Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Markman Madness on a very special Tuesday evening. My name is Mark Heffernan. This is produced by Mancini Media. Our producer is Mark Mancini. I'm Mark Heffernan, thus MMM, Markman Madness. And my email site, markheff20@gmail.com, markheff20@gmail.com. By the way, I sent my email at least five times to a person last week, and they still couldn't get it right. M-A-R-K-H-E-F like in Frank, F like in Frank, 20@gmail.com. They still couldn't get it right, so I hung up on them. I said, are you listening to me? You're not listening to me, right? Now, remember, I didn't give my phone number or my other email address, just one email, and they still couldn't figure it out. I said, man, you would never be an announcer. Anyway, our number, 347-205-9631. 347-205-9631. Mark Mancini is excited because his Pirates are beating those damn Yankees. And I'm sure he's aware that there are 162 games during a regular season in Major League Baseball. This game really means nothing, I guess, except for your Pirates fan. What are they, 14 or 15 games under 500? Are they going to make the playoffs? The Yankees have had a great season, not playing as well recently as they were before that, but that's going to happen. But you're 58 and, what, 22? You know, one of the best records ever in baseball to this point, almost at a halfway deal. And the Yankees won a lot of games in their last at-bat, so watch out for those walk-off. Off single, walk-off double, or walk-off home run by Aaron Judge. Oh, my, Giancarlo Stanton. That's coming up. That's coming up. By the way, as I look at the standings, the Yankees in America League East after 80 games are 58 and 22. Boston at 45 and 35, 13 back. In the National League West, the only two divisions I really care about, the Dodgers, those Dodgers, 15 and 29. And the Padres, kind of sliding a little bit, 47 and 35, four and a half back of the Dodgers. Now, Machado came back and didn't have much of a series against the Dodgers. I saw him strike out, I think, six times in the four games. He kind of got a help from Gavin Lux with a double in game number one, but he came up in critical situations, and they took care of him, even though Kimbrough blew the game the other day after he threw great pitches against Machado. He struggled to hit by Voit, hit the top of the wall over Gavin Lux's head in left field, bounced back, and if he was actually running hard, he would have had a triple. If he was fast, Voit, he should have had an inside-the-park home run. Instead, he stood, watched the ball for 10 seconds. Then he loafed around the bases. He only got a double. And earlier in the game, their catcher hit a deep fly to right. He watched it. And he got a long single. He should have had a double. Now, if I'm Bob Melvin, who looks like he's asleep most of the time, I'd have a talk with the guys, and I would find them. I would find them. Get off your ass and hustle in games. I don't care how much you're playing. We're not playing really good ball right now with Padres. Three wins your last 10 games, get your ass in gear and start hustling in games. They were fortunate to win that game. I don't like when guys watch balls unless you hit it 450 feet and they don't hustle on the base pass. That can cost you games, it costs you runs. They didn't score a lot of runs against the Dodgers in that four-game series. They won one, they come back the next day and they get beat. Inconsistency. Get your ass in gear and start hustling. I don't care if you're a pro athlete or not. These managers ever talk to their players or are they afraid to? Because they make so much money. That's my point. This is Markman Madness on Blog Talk Radio. Hank Goldberg, who worked at ESPN as an NFL reporter and handicapping expert, died Monday on his 82nd birthday. He had been in treatment for chronic kidney disease. Hammering Hank was 500 or better in 15 of the 17 NFL seasons. He made appearances on NFL Countdown, ESPN Radio, and ESPN's Daily Wager. Okay, Scott Howard Cooper is my guest on this brief version of Markman Madness for this Tuesday. He is a sports author. Scott, welcome to MMM. How are you?
I am great. How are you?
Doing pretty good. The weather is not bad here in Bakersfield. It's been nice for the last three or four days, and it'll probably heat up when I leave and go up to the Bay Area for a while. And so you're author of a book about Steve Kerr, and the book is called Steve Kerr, A Life. Now, he really has had a fantastic life. I was reading about him today a little bit more, and I didn't realize he's the first to win four-plus titles as a player and as a coach. in the four major North American sports. Now, you know, Phil Jackson won a championship with the New York Knicks, won 9 as a coach, but not at least 4 as a player and also as a coach. That's an amazing accomplishment. And it seems like Kerr's been around for 80 years, but he's still relatively a young man.
and I think he would be the first. Yeah, I was going to say, I think he'd be the first one to tell you how shocked he is to have all that success. Coaching, maybe. It's something he had wanted to do for a long time. It's something he really thought he could do well. He showed up with a lot more confidence as a coach than he had as a player. So on the sideline, yeah, but player, nobody is more surprised at his success than Steve Kerr. He never saw this coming. He didn't think he belonged at a Pac-10 school. He thought if a lot of things broke right, he could squeeze a year, maybe 2, out of the NBA, and he got 15. It's been a blessed life in a lot of ways, a difficult life. He's had some real setbacks, some real hardships.
It's been a blessed life. It's been a blessed life in some ways, but it has been a difficult life. And we talked about the fact off there, his dad was president at American University in Beirut. And tell us what happened to his dad and how that kind of changed the course of Steve's life.
The family had deep ties in the Middle East. Steve's grandparents met there and lived there for a long time, and then his dad as well. And Steve's mom and dad actually met at that school, American University in Beirut. And many years later, the dad had an opportunity to go back and be president at the school, and it was kind of a dream job. But he knew very well the risks involved. The whole family did. And in January 1984, during Steve's freshman year at University of Arizona, his father was assassinated in the hallway just outside his office on campus. And Steve and his dad were very close. Everybody liked Malcolm Kerr. He had been in the United States for a long time, was 20 years in the political science department at UCLA, and then ended up going back to the Middle East and was really well liked there. It's a tragedy that Steve still hasn't gotten over.
Well, he never will either. So he still brings it to this day. As you know, we've had a lot of shootings here in America, not just in the last couple of months, but the last few years. And you had at least 6 people shot at a parade yesterday, the 4th of July parade, outside of Chicago. My mother grew up in Waukegan, Illinois, North Chicago. She was born in New Jersey, Newark, New Jersey. She met my dad when he was at the Great Lakes Naval Academy. For some reason, they came to Bakersfield. That came to Buck Owens country. I think my dad's dad, he got a job with Standard Oil. This had to be back in the, I guess, late 30s. No, wait a minute. It had to be in the 20s or so when my grandfather came out here, because my dad was born in 1920. And played for Bakersfield High, which was then Kern County Union High School. He graduated in 1937. East High, our second public school in town, was founded, began in 1938. I went to Garces, a parochial school, and Garces started in 1947. And my dad was always very quiet about his accomplishments, and I was the youngest in the family. And I'd heard from him years later that he was actually offered the very first football head coaching job at Garces and turned it down. And that had to be late 40, well, it had to be 48, 49. So he must have been 28, 29 years old. But he had a young family at the time, and he was in the car business for many years. But I learned things about my dad as I got older, and I still learn things about him now from my eldest sister, who's kind of like, she knows all about the family history and beyond. So that's kind of interesting. So Steve Kerr's father was assassinated. Did they kill anybody else at that university?
No.
So was it somebody who had a vendetta against Mr. Kerr? Did they have a vendetta? Or was it a political kind of thing that they had against him?
Yeah, they had a vendetta against Americans. And,
oh, just against Americans, okay.
Yeah, it was strictly because he was a high-profile American in a mm-hmm. town that was hunting Americans. And it was all about the politics. It was all about the Middle East conflict and the United States and Israel. It got into the whole Middle East history. That's what it was all mm-hmm. about. And the United States government determined immediately that it was the work of the government of Iran, that they had orchestrated this, they had backed it, they had financed it, that this was an attack on an American by a foreign government.
Scott Howard Cooper is my guest on Markman Madness, MMM, here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Mark Heffernan. Our producer is Mark Mancini. Mr. Pittsburgh is still thinking the Pirates are going to win their division. That's another story. Anyway, Scott, you finished this book before Kerr and Golden State won the latest championship, right? They've won four titles in the past 8 years. You actually finished this book before he won another championship.
It set up really well because, in a sense,
yes,
what happened in this just completed completed NBA, was sort of Steve's life in a microcosm. He had been a guy that had overcome adversity so many times, and this was his coaching adversity, was going without Klay Thompson for a couple of years, and all he wanted was to be tested with his full team, and he got this last season. He didn't want to lose in the trainer's room like he had the previous couple seasons, and I think that made this last one extra special.
You know, Clay's brother's doing a pretty good job with the Dodgers. Got called back, Trace Thompson. 2 runs, 10 RBIs in very limited time. He has earned some playing time at right field. You know, Mookie Betts was hurt. Betts has come back. He's either DHing, playing right, or second base. But Trace had a 3-run home run yesterday, which was a big blow in the Dodgers' victory over Colorado. He's got some pop. I think his first home run here for the Dodgers about a week ago was around 400 feet. It was in Colorado, of course, but it was a line drive. And last night, jacked it very well to left center field. Seems to be a very popular player. Done a good job defensively, and he can smack the ball, has some good pop. So it's the second stint with the Dodgers. He was kind of in, you know, Triple-A and doing very well there. But as you know, you can hit 290, 295 in Triple-A, and you come to the major leagues, and within a month you're hitting about 175. It's just totally different. There's so many better pitchers at the MLB level, and they have so many pitches, and, you know, every time you come to bat, it's another challenge because a lot of starters on the last 4 or 5 innings. And then like the Dodgers, the managers will use, you know, 5 and 6 pitchers every game. But he's done a good job, so kudos to him. I know that his dad, Michael, and Clay and the family are very happy with his progress. He's doing a good job. Let's get back to Steve Kerr and your book. Why did you put together this project? Why did you want to do a book about Steve Kerr? I mean, he still has plenty of years to coach. He's accomplished a lot in his life. But why did you decide to write a book about him? I guess it was, 1-2 years ago or so?
Because it seemed like an extraordinary story. It's not just a basketball book. I'll tell you how I pitched it to the publishers. What normally happens is you shop your idea around, and then you have some phone conversations to flush it out with the different publishers. And they decide if they want to purchase it or not. And I told them this is the story of a guy with a unique career but a fascinating life, that everybody knows Steve Kerr for hitting the shot that gave the Bulls the title in 96. Maybe they know him for beating Arizona to the Final Four, obviously coaching the Warriors. But really, there's so much more to this guy, that what has happened off the court is completely crazy, that you could get in Kim Jong-un into this book without having to stretch at all. Yasser Arafat without having to stretch at all. 9/11 is in there. Pearl Harbor. This is a guy whose name has come up in the White House to be a government representative to North Korea. Not just, you know, rumor mill stuff, but actually come up. This is a guy that has been in so many different situations. He's been told that before what would have been his senior year of college, he was told his career is over because he blew out his knee playing for Team USA. The doctor told him that night, you're probably not playing again. Again, look what happened after that. He gets punched out by Michael Jordan. He ends up hitting the shot years later that gives the Bulls the title and gets up. Many people will remember the victory celebration in Grant Park where he basically said, I had to go bail out Michael. And the whole crowd was just laughing. And it has been one thing after another. He had the serious health setback early in his time with the Warriors where he was having to consider privately, he didn't discuss this with very many people, that he would have to quit, that he would have to walk away from his dream job after waiting so many years to become a head coach. It almost disappeared on him. The stuff that has gone on in this guy's life apart from basketball is amazing, and that's what appealed to me, that it was more than a basketball story.
He talked about the fact that when he was a freshman in Arizona, his father was assassinated. It had to be an extremely difficult time for him. Now, did they tell him then, as a freshman, from a standpoint of being a basketball player, that he didn't have what it took to be a star or a starter for Luke Olsen there at Arizona? I mean, besides the fact that his father passed away, what was his talent level like when he was a freshman in Arizona? He's about 6'3". I'm sure he's always been a pretty good shooter, but he might have limitations as a defensive player or with his handles and things like that.
He's in Tucson only because Lute Olsen is a first-year coach there and taking over a team that had just gone 4-24. And Lute had a roster, and Lute had one scholarship to give. It was the summer. It was after Steve had graduated from high school, and Lute's like, "Yeah, okay, I got some spare change, and you know, the bottom of my seat cushions. I might as well spend it." Thinking, "All right, this guy will be a fourth or fifth guard for 1 year, and then I'll recruit over him and bring somebody in." Steve, to his surprise, to everybody's surprise, ends up being a pretty decent player as a freshman, and then turns into, as we said, by the time he left college, he was one of the best players in the country. Nobody expected that kind of success from him, and that's sort of his storyline every step of the way.
Well, he must have a great work ethic. It happened when he was a student, as an athlete, and obviously as a coach. Great work ethic, a very disciplined, but he doesn't take himself too seriously. He's always had a number of wisecracks. You know, he was a commentator, as you know, I guess on TNT back in the early days, did a good job with Marv Albert. And I know that he spent some time in the front office with the Phoenix Suns. I thought he was going that route. I thought he was going to be a general manager for many years to go. And I don't know if he went from being a GM to announcing or the other direction. But it amazes me that obviously he went into coaching. Of course, he's been taught by some great coaches. You look at, you know, Phil Jackson in Chicago and Olsen in Arizona. So he's taken a lot of what he's learned. He's good friends with Popovich. He's taken a lot of what he's learned. He's applied it and kind of his story. But the amazing thing about, you know, Golden State, like you said, they had with Clay going down with two injuries and being out basically for 2 years, and Kevin Durant signs elsewhere, but he kind of kept it together. Was it last year or 2 years ago? They lost a lot of games, I think. They had one of the worst records in the league, and Steph Curry was on the team. And I don't think anybody gave Golden State much of a chance to win the championship this year. I had Phoenix playing Miami in the NBA Finals. But the problem with Miami is that a lot of guys just kind of went in the toilet when it came to shooting the ball late in the playoffs. It was Jimmy Butler and nobody else at all. When he had a bad game, they were not winning. They generally played pretty good defense, but their offense – pretty much sucked in the playoffs, tired. The Phoenix just kind of went down the tube. I was very surprised by Phoenix. They played exceptionally well last year and have a 2-0 lead on Milwaukee and lost 4 straight. And those games were winnable, and they didn't come through. And this year had a great regular season, kind of cruised a lot, and they really fell apart in the clutch, especially that one game they lost at home. I was at a place, you know, watching TV and eating wings, and that was just – for me, a very pathetic performance. And I don't think it's just on the players. I think it's on the coaches, too. I don't give anybody on that team a free pass for their performance in that series and in their performance in that game. Now, the guys that cover the NBA, they like to give a lot of guys a free pass. I don't. That's just the way I roll. And I don't know what happened to them. Aiden wants a big contract. He didn't play that well. Paul's just getting older all the time. He gets hurt late in the year and is just not effective. He's not going to get better. He's going to get worse. They really need to get another younger point guard. Payne, who backed him up and played when Paul was hurt, he signed with another team. He wants more playing time. And so you're going to see some changes with that team. They should make changes. So we talked about, you know, Curry's bad situation. His father was assassinated. He goes to Arizona, and Lute Olsen is just kind of filling out a roster spot. Because of his work ethic and his shooting ability, becomes a star at Arizona, goes into the NBA. Did he start off with the Chicago Bulls? I didn't really follow him that much in his career. I knew he played with Michael. What teams did he play for in the NBA, Steve Kerr? Did he play with Chicago's entire career?
No, he started off, he was drafted by the Suns, second-round pick. There 1 year, doesn't get a chance, doesn't get on the court very much at all. It's a veteran team. They're trying to win right away. They had some serious image problems around the Suns back in those days. And so there were
Was Barkley playing at that time?
No, that was before that. And so he plays there 1 year, and then the Cavaliers like him. They're looking to get some backup help for Mark Price and Craig Elo in the backcourt, and they needed some shooting, and Wayne Embry liked them a lot. So they spent a second-round pick to get Steve Kerr to the Cavaliers, and he gets a chance to play, wins a three-point shooting title, sort of establishes himself that he can, in the right situation, he can play in the league. He ends up getting traded again for spare change to the Orlando Magic and is a disaster there. Within 2 weeks, he's out of the rotation, and the head coach is Matt Gukas, and he's various times when Steve is on the court, Matty's turning around and telling other people on the bench, this guy can't play. And Steve finishes out that half season in Orlando and is basically realizing he might have to retire. He's thinking, should I call Lute? Maybe I can go back and be a grad assistant, like to get started either in the coaching path or athletic administration, becoming an athletic director one day. He's barely getting interest from other teams. He's not getting any hard offers, just a little conversation. And he shows up, he's telling people, I think I have to retire. I think it's over for me. And that's, again, that's how his life turns. This guy that goes from thinking my career is over ends up with the Bulls, and everything breaks right. And I mean everything. He shows up, and they're thinking, again, this guy's a fifth guard. He can shoot a little bit, minimum contract, good in the locker room, so there's not going to be any issues. And Michael Jordan retires a couple weeks later. And suddenly it's like, geez, we need this guy. We need guards. And so Steve ends up establishing himself to Phil Jackson and Jerry Krause and the Bulls as somebody who can play in the triangle, so that by the time Michael comes back, Steve has established himself as somebody that can stay. And then, of course, he's one of the thousands in that organization that ride Michael's coattails to championships and delivers by hitting the basket that beats the Jazz for the clincher in game six. That's where things really took off for him. The Bulls were his fourth team.
Wow. Well, he's a guy that's done very well with his back to the wall, both personally and professionally. Like you said,
Absolutely.
It seems like things are going down the hill, and for some reason, he's able to rise again. He's able to rise from the ashes. When he's knocked down once, twice, three, four times, he rises and does unbelievable things. And we had talked off the air about his leadership abilities, and he's learned from some great coaches. And I'm sure he's gone to a lot of, went to a lot of clinics over the years. He's been around some great players. So he's been like a sponge over the years. He's learned from outstanding players, outstanding coaches, to be the person he is today. And I remember not that long ago when, there was some of those shootings when he had that press conference, and he talked about that instead of talking about the game going on. I think they were in the playoffs at the time, but it wasn't the finals. And you can see how emotional it was for Steve Kerr, talking about, the gun debate. And I know that's something he's been concerned about for most of his life, for personal reasons. And like you said, he probably could do a lot of other things in life, and not just be a basketball commentator or a general manager of a team, but he probably could do some things in politics if he really wanted to. He has that name. He has that there might be some people that don't like him. A lot of people like him. They like what he has to say. He's very articulate. He's been very successful in different areas, different genres over his career. And that's the type of person you want to lead an organization or actually to be in politics. I don't think he's going to allow people to use him. I think Steve Kerr, for the most part, he has pretty firm beliefs. He's had those firm beliefs for a long time, and he's going to do things a certain way.
Well, the gun control issue in particular is not just a topic for him. It's personal. It's real.
Well, he's engaged now.
for all the obvious reasons. It's when he – there's no phony about him. When he – when you see him happy and joking around, that's who he is. When you see him angry and pounding a table about gun control, or in an NBA setting a few years ago when he slams the clipboard when he's on the sideline, he slams the clipboard on the ground and it breaks. That's all real. There's no phony about him. Everything you see about him is pretty truthful. I know that a lot of people don't like his politics. That gets him on the wrong side. But I will tell you that he is easily, not by a little bit, but easily one of the most popular guys that has passed through the NBA in the last 25 or 30 years. You have to work really hard to find someone who doesn't like him. And that includes players that he's clashed with and opponents, and he's had to make difficult trades as a general manager. He is a very, very likable guy. The people who don't like him, it's because of his politics, not because of his personality.
You know, they can't separate it, but one thing we can say about Steve Kerr is that he's been very impactful in the game and in life over the past 25 to 30 years. So whether you like him or not, he does have a voice. And he has been a very successful person in different areas of life. And so you have to listen really to what he has to say, because there's a lot of intelligence there. He's not just a guy speaking off the top of his head. He's been there. He suffered tragedy. He's bounced back from that. He's been a champion, as I mentioned, the only player in North American sports, in four major North American sports, to win four-plus titles as a player and as a head coach. And he's not ready to retire yet, Mr. Steve Kerr. The book is Steve Kerr, A Life, by Scott Howard Cooper. Now, is this book available online, Scott? Can people buy it in stores?
I think we're still in some stores. It depends on the city, depends on the market. I know we were in some of the major chains for a long time, and also some independent bookstores. Big props for all the independent bookstores. But yes, it 100% is available online at the major distributors. You can always go there and get it. I know 100% that it's available there.
Now, your next book is coming out in the spring of 2024, Close to My Heart, Kingdom on Fire, Kareem, Wooden, Walton, and the Turbulent Days of the UCLA Basketball Dynasty. I mean, is it really turbulent when you're winning all the time? I guess so.
It is because the players are not enjoying themselves. It's really I'm so excited about this book. I just got the deal got finalized just not too long ago, so this is great to be able to talk about it finally. I've been wanting to do it for so many years, but it's basically the book ends. The story is the arrival of Lou Alcindor until the departure of Bill Walton, angry superstar center to angry superstar center, and this grandfatherly coach from the Midwest sort of holding it all together. Yeah, they had great players, but the players were unhappy. They weren't winning. Did not soothe them. Everything that it's all about the backdrop. You put it in context, and you think, wow, seven consecutive championships. But it's seven consecutive championships while his players are speaking out against racism, protesting the Vietnam War, getting arrested, grumbling after they win a championship. Kareem and Lucius Allen came very close to transferring after their freshman year. Yes, they
were
winning
a
lot.
Scott Howard Cooper, I got to cut you off right now. We have a very short program tonight. Scott Howard Cooper, thanks a lot for being on Markman Madness. My name is Mark Heffernan. Our producer is Mark Mancini. Join me next week, next Monday, at a regular time at 5 o'clock, right here on Blog Talk Radio, driven by Mancini Media, for Markman Madness. God bless you, and good night.